Okay, so welcome back to another episode of Lock It or Leave It and another special guest. We've been on a tear lately, getting a lot of the basketball team, and this guy coming on is one of our vets. He's been here for both Sweet 16 appearances, Malik Osborne. When we get back, you'll be hearing from one of the players who also bodied a Louisville guy. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Okay, so we are back, and let's just start off with saying hello to everybody. As always, I'm your host, Jay, and joining me as usual is my co-host, Cam. Cam, how are you, man?
I'm great. The Bulls are back. Showtime's back in Chicago. Justin Fields just got named QB1 over a healthy Andy Dalton, so, you know, I don't have to watch the Red Rifle anymore. So I'm in a good mood and ready to get into this episode.
Yeah, the Bulls were looking like the Showtime Lakers last night. I don't know what was going on. There was like a four possession in a row, just sequence. Caruso back to DeRozan, dunk. LaVine backdoor by Lonzo, dunk. Caruso half court, dunk. And it's just like, whoa, this team looks like they've been playing together for 5 years already. But what are you going to the next guest, Aaron, our other co-host? How are you doing, Aaron? How are you?
I'm doing great. Both my football teams won this weekend. Shout out Ryan Fitzgerald for that game-winning kick. Shout out the Patriots kicker for missing the kick that gave, you know, my teams their win. So really excited for the NBA to start up here soon. The Magic looked good the other night. Cole Anthony sadly did not, but that's pretty par for the course. No, I'm kidding. But I think it's going to be a good season for the Magic. I could see us making the playoffs. The Bulls, though, man, the Bulls look really good. They're going to be a lot of fun to watch. I could see them doing really well in the East, making some noise, especially as Philly still has this dysfunction going on. So can't wait to see how the NBA season shakes out this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I was down bad last night when I was talking a lot of smack, and the Yankees' $340 million pitcher lasted not even three innings. He was taken out, and the rest was history. I was watching that when Cam and I were playing poker. It was terrible, man. But we're going to our special guest. Last but not least, Malik Osborne. He's been here since the inception. Thanks for coming on, Malik. How are you doing today?
Oh, man, I'm doing well. I got to say, I'm with Cam. I'm very happy to hear that Chicago's looking like Showtime. Happy to hear that Justin Fields is starting QB. It's a great day to be a Chicago sports fan, man. Great day.
You got to wait till Pat Will gets back, too. Once that ankle heals up, ooh, they're going to be scary.
Oof, we're going to be dangerous, man. It's been a long time coming, dog. It's been a long time coming, but we here now, you know what I'm saying? Chicago's lit. I got my boys texting me back at home telling me how excited they are. And I'm like, man, we ain't even in our final form yet. So it's like I said, man, it's a great time right now.
Malik, you're from the Chicago area. So was there any culture shock coming down to Rice University and now Florida State down here in the South when you first kind of moved down here?
Oh, man, definitely, especially going down to Rice. You know, Rice was a private university, so a lot of the students really were, like, international students. So, like, going down there, I'm thinking it's going to be, like, you know, Houston, Texas. I think it's going to be, like, a nice little melting pot, but I'm thinking it's going to be majority white and black. But, I mean, you get to school and there's majority Asian and Indian students and international students, you know, it kind of, like, it shifts your whole perspective on college for a minute, and it kind of shifted my whole perspective on it for a second, too. But, I mean, it was interesting. It was a new feel, something that, you know what I'm saying, I learned from, something that I got acclimated to over time. But, like, you know, I got very accustomed to my surroundings, going to the University of Houston every now and then and just kind of hanging out with them and kind of getting that other, you know, typical college experience where, you know, you have your house parties, you have your regular parties, you know, football games, basketball games were live. And then, you know, coming down to Florida State, going from a predominantly, you know, international school to a PWI where, you know, there's just, you got Florida State and you have FAMU across the tracks where it's just like, you have the best of both worlds and both of them go hard when they celebrate and both of them love sports and, you know, it's kind of a closer, tight knit feel. So it's like more like a family feel. Everybody knows a lot of, everybody pretty much knows everybody. And especially like they show a lot of love to the athletes. I mean, it was a couple culture shocks for me, but you know, I'm glad to end up at Florida State. Florida State is definitely that dream college experience. You know, you got everything you see growing up in college that you want, you know, sports wise, socially wise, school wise. I mean, it's definitely a dream school that I didn't expect to be at first, but I'm glad I'm here.
Yeah, I actually had a pretty similar experience. So I transferred here from NYU. So very similar kind of student base to Rice, same kind of vibes on the campus. And coming here has been awesome. I mean, there's nowhere else I'd rather be. So I got to ask, what really factored into your, when they were recruiting you to transfer here, what kind of factored into that? Was it the coaching staff, the obvious, the atmosphere, the location? What really sold it for you?
Well, I mean, you know, when I first came here, when I was deciding to come here, we had Coach Gates, Coach Dennis Gates. He was coach here for quite some time and then ended up becoming the head coach at Cleveland State men's basketball team. He actually was the first one to hit me up when I was at Rice when I decided to transfer. And, you know, he's a guy from Chicago. And so right there, you know what I'm saying, we kind of had that in common. And, you know, he was real patient with me, real cool with me. And then at this time, Fiondu Capengelly was here. He playing for the Cavs now, but he went to the same prep school I went to before I went to Rice. So already had a connection, you know what I'm saying, a guy to pretty much hang around before I even came to Florida State. You know, I have a lot of family in Florida. My dad's from Fort Lauderdale. So that was a plus as well. I wanted to stay someplace where it was warm because, you know, being up in Chicago it gets cold and snowy out there. So I was like, man, I done had 18 years of that. I need a place where I can just relax and be comfortable where the winters are so harsh and I could just really just, you know what I'm saying, just vibe and just get done what I need to get done. So then, and at the time, Florida State basketball was also on the come up. I remember actually watching their Elite Eight run in my Rice dorm with my roommate. And this was like when I announced that I was going to transfer. And my grandma called me and was like, man, like, are you watching Florida State? I could really see you playing at Florida State. And it was just so crazy how it worked out. And Coach Gates, his recruitment was straightforward. He didn't play around with me. He just told me, hey, we're interested in you. We like what you can do for us. And then the same day, later that day, he offered me. So, you know, a lot of other schools kind of waited 2, 3 days and was like, oh, we want you to stand by. We're waiting for this, waiting for that. You know, Florida State was straight to the point. And, you know, that's what allowed me to trust them a lot. And so I got to campus, got to meet the team. The team seemed like family. You know, it didn't seem like people were just on the court, like coworkers. And then once, you know, practice was over, they clocked out of work and just went their separate ways. So like everybody stayed together, everybody hung out, everybody went out together, ate together. And it was like, man, like you would think that all these guys are related. So that was the type of environment I wanted to be in, especially when it was becoming a winning culture as well. I thought it was like the perfect match for me, you know. I had my style of play. They recruit a lot of guys like me. The playing style caters to guys of my physique and athleticism and skill set. So, like I said, once I got offered from Florida State and took that visit, I knew this was the place I needed to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Quick shout out to Mifendu, I think I'm saying that, Mifondu Cabangeli, because when we had T-Man on also, he said when he went to the Clippers, he was like, you know what, it was a little culture shock for me, but I had Cabangeli there with me going from the East Coast to the West Coast, so shout out to him, and shout out to him being on the Cavs also. But kind of going back to you and talking about your game, you live in the mid-post nail area, and you hit defenders with head fakes to free up space in order to finish with either your left or your right hand. And it's important to have touch around the rim as a forward. What do you most likely or mostly try to work on your game that will be utilized later on in the court?
I mean, definitely, I would say more of like a driving to the perimeter and just working on like a pull-up mid-post game. Like I already know that I'm improving my three-point shot. You know, I'm aiming 40% this year from three, but also just trying to just play more aggressive. You know, get into the rim, get into the foul line. You know, I felt like that was one of those things that I don't utilize as much as I should have. I'm a bigger, stronger player than majority, so I know that I can use my body, my quickness to draw a lot of fouls and get to the free throw line and just get easy points and easy baskets for the team, as well as just, you know, using a mid-range pull-up game, some similar to like, you know, the Devin Vassells or Trent Forrest, Raquan Gray, you know, using that floater and just not having to go to the basket all the time and making stuff too difficult because, you know, we play against a lot of players who are 7 foot, 7'2", 7'3" wingspans, you know, they're smart and an elite shot blocker. So it's like you won't be able to get to the rim every time. And even then, I can still get by the perimeter guy, and I don't have to get closer than close, and still just find a way to get some easy baskets and make the game a little more simple for myself. You know, I don't want to have to get to the paint and use 1,000 head fakes just to try to get 2 points. I want to be able to make it simple as possible, you know, being able to conserve some stamina and be able to just, you know, play for the long run, you know, being a leader of the team. I know they're going to use me a lot later on in the game, and they're going to need me later on in the game. And I don't want to tire myself out too fast. I want to make sure I play the smart way and play as efficient as possible. So really just the mid-post game and getting to the free throw line and just making the game just even more simple than just, you know, a whole bunch of head fakes, you know?
Yeah, you basically embody the archetype of what Florida State's been looking for with like the BGU brand. Shout out to David Nichols. And I think that's one of my favorite things about watching Florida State play is all of our players can pretty much guard almost 1 through 5. Like when we had John Butler on previously, he said one of the reasons he came to Florida State was because obviously like in high school, he's a 7-footer. They're just going to make him play center. But when he got recruited to come to Florida State, they told him they want him to play guard. And obviously like last year, Scotty Barnes played power forward in high school and they started him at point guard. And I just love that like Florida State is always trying to find those big guards and then switching on defense and making it hell for the opposing offenses. I just love that.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Cam. Like Coach Ham, it was so wild because before Scotty came here, you know what I'm saying? We saw him at power forward in high school. I saw him at power forward in high school. And Coach Ham was telling me that he was thinking about putting him as a point guard. And that was just like, you know what I'm saying? That was so shocking to me because I'm like, man, we just had Trent Forrest, who's like 6'5". Like, he was running point. And even then, we thought that was a big guard. But now we're talking about a man who is 6'9", with over a 7-foot wingspan playing the guard. It just really – and the fact that it worked, you know, he was averaging 4 assists, and he was like one of the top assist men in the conference at 6'9". So it just like – it just shows that what type of personnel Coach Ham looks for and just – how fluent and how versatile our players are. Because Scotty, like I said, he can play point and then he can go down low and defend a 7-foot center. It's just really the culture of Florida State and how Coach Ham and the rest of the coaching staff design everything to play. I mean, design all of us to play. So it's a unique playing system, a unique playing style we have.
You also got Scotty picking up the other team's point guard at full court, and you have to drive against that 7-foot wingspan all the way down before you can even start your offense.
Exactly. And even if you do get past him, you got a 7'4 guy at the rim, you got a 6'8 guy in help, you got another 6'9 guy in help. Like it's you know what I'm saying, when they say don't go down there with the trees, the trees are all over the place now. You know what I'm saying? The trees are everywhere.
The point guard's a tree.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, I mean, that's what also makes it so fun to play. It's just like, you know, that you kind of have that physical advantage. And it makes it very hard for these teams to function, which makes it a lot easier for us to get into easy offense and just have a showtime mentality after going just transitioning from defense to offense in a split second. So, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, so going off that showtime mentality, we've seen that many times in the Tuck, but also your highlight play against Louisville. I always say at this point we're Louisville's father when it comes to basketball. Trent Forrest had the body bag and the Tuck, and your poster on JJ Trainer. By the way, JJ, if you're hearing this, we're coming back for more this year. Can you take us through that possession? Maybe after, give us the aftermath where you're running down the court like, oh man, this shit's probably going top 10. What were you thinking? What was going on in your head?
Oh man, the whole play, and it's so how it developed. It was like, it all felt like a last second thing. I remember Ray just driving to the basket. And, you know, our principal, when somebody's driving, somebody's got to fill up just to give him that release valve if he doesn't have anything. And Ray didn't have anything. He jumped up in the air, didn't have many options, was about to land. And then I just caught the ball, told Ray I'm behind him. As soon as I caught the ball, my initial thought was to shoot the three. And so I kind of gave a little slow pump fake just to see if he was going to bite for it. And sure enough, he bit for it. And so as soon as I took that one dribble, I just saw nothing but space. I saw nothing but space. And then I got my 1-2 step in, and I was like, oh, man, I got the 1-2 step in. It's about to go down. So I took off that 1 foot. And it's crazy enough, it really should have been an and-one, because when I cocked it back, I got hit in the face. And so I lost sight of the rim for a second. But then I was still knowing that I still had the rim in my sight off my peripheral. And then was just able to slam the ball in, because I knew that also the shot clock was winding down. So As soon as I dunked it, for a split second, I didn't know I had dunked it. But then once I saw everybody, I looked at the sideline, everybody was tapping their head. I said, oh, man, I got him. I said, oh, man, I got him. And so I was running down the court. And in my head, I was like, man, calm down. You got to play defense. Calm down. You got to play defense. But in my head, I was like, yo, that was crazy. I bet that joint looked crazy on film right now. And so we got the foul. And then they called the timeout and everything after that. And I was just like, I was looking around to see if they would replay it. But obviously, they weren't going to replay it at their place. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get up with them later. And I said, let's just make sure I win the game, so let's make sure I win the game so the highlight sticks with them. And so they sure enough, we was able to win that game in convincing fashion. And boy, I saw that joint everywhere. I saw them when I first saw them on SportsCenter. I was like, mama, we made it. We on TV. But yeah, that was one of the most exciting moments for me last year, for sure.
Yeah, so going off that, it was great seeing your reaction, because you had this big stomp too. You stomped real hard, and then you started running down the court with the mean mug on, and I was just laughing my ass off. And the funny part was, I always say you can gauge how good a play is off the bench's reaction. If the bench is going wild, you know the play was crazy. You did the same thing the next game, but on the defensive side, when Hunter Tyson tried to go up on you, man. Take us through that play, because when you probably looked at him and you when he left up and you were like, Hunter, really? You really trying to jump with me? What was going on in your head during that play, man?
No, that play, honestly, I'm not gonna lie, that play was kind of funny to me, but at the same time, I felt insulted. I felt a little disrespected, I ain't gonna lie. So after I remember sliding over, I forgot Alamir Dawes. He was driving, and he drove into the paint. Was like three of us. And my initial reaction was like, all right, he's coming to the rim. Let me try to wall up, see if I can block the shot. He ends up passing it out, and I actually tip it with my left hand. And because I think he was trying to pass it to somebody else, but the fact that I tipped it, it showed up. I mean, it ended up going to Hunter Tyson. So Hunter Tyson got the ball. He took one dribble, and I was still in help because I was like, all right, I know I have Amir Sims on my right, and I know Alamir Dawes is on my right too. So I'm like, get ready to kind of stunt and then wait for the kick out. And I saw him take one, two step. I was like, hold on now. I said, he's not doing what I think he's about to do. And so then he started to take off, and I jumped up, and then it was crazy because it felt like it was in slow motion in my head. I was like, this mug trying to dunk me, dog? I said, oh, now he's trying to dunk me? I was like, come on, dog. So I jumped up, and the closest hand I had to him at the time was my left hand. And I saw him cock it back. And once I saw him cock it back, I was like, bro, I have enough hang time and enough elevation to perfectly time this. And he tried to slam it, and I tried to palm it with my left hand, and it ended up hitting my wrist. And I still was trying to throw it. And then once I blocked it, I landed. And the first thing I wanted to do was kind of meme mug him. But then I had to make sure the ball was out of play because I didn't know if I have to get back in play. And the ball went out of bounds. And in my head, I was like, what is wrong with him? But then I ended up saying it out loud, like, bro, what's wrong with you? And then I turned to the bench, and I was it almost seemed like I was asking for, like, I was looking for an answer. I was like, man, what's wrong with dude? Like, come on now. What's wrong with dude? He gonna challenge me out of all people? He gonna challenge me? And so then I just kept repeating that. I kept repeating. I said, man, what is wrong with him? What's wrong with him? And then I remember telling Alamir Dawes, I said, bro, don't tell him to try. I was like, don't ever try that again with me, dog. Like, that's, I'm not one of them. And so after that, you know what I'm saying, they ended up not scoring on the next possession, and then we just went down the court, and I was just like, man, like, I didn't even think it was that big of a play, because I guess at the time, I thought I was just being challenged like that. I was like, man, this is like, he should expect to get blocked by me out of all people. But but after the game was over, everybody was telling me, man, the block is on ESPN. I said, really? I said, what did the block look like? And once I saw it, I said, ooh. And then I didn't even realize that the mic caught me. I told him, I said, give me that shit. And I was like, you know what I'm saying? The mic caught all of that. And I was like, oh, man. And I thought because I said that, it wasn't going to be on SportsCenter. But then even then, they still put it on SportsCenter. And I was like, wow. Like, it was just one of those moments where it was like, I just had a top 10 play before, and now I got a top 10 play again. And I was like, man, like, life is sweet right now. You know what I'm saying? I kept feeding for more.
Did he say anything back to you?
Nah, he couldn't say anything back to me. What could he say to me?
Exactly. I mean,
he tried to challenge me, and he lost that. Like, he tried to punch it on me, and I literally stopped him at the door. I said, access denied. Like, you got to try again. You got to try again with somebody else because it's going to be access denied with me every time. But nah, he didn't say nothing to me. I was like, I was looking for him to say something to me. But at the time, we were just on Clemson at that point. I think we beat them by over 20 that game. So it was nothing left to be said.
Yeah, those mics pick up a lot of stuff. Carmelo Anthony has been made a staple for always saying, give me that shit, after he grabs a rebound, because the mic will catch that every time. But my question is, with all these highlight plays that we have, who do you think is the most energetic or the biggest hype man on the bench whenever something crazy goes on?
You talking about this year or you talking about like last year?
Last year or whichever year. Who's the craziest person who was one of the best bench players? Not bench players, but bench celebrators.
Is it the garbage best time? Is it the garbage time gorilla?
I think the best bench celebrator, if it's not me, it's gotta be Justin. Justin always comes through with the energy, dog. He always comes through with some creative things to do, creative gimmicks, stuff to say. Like, I mean, when it comes to just playing any game, especially when we're on the road, I always look for him to just get into it with the other crowd. And it's like, you know, the crowd always like, oh, you're a bench player, you don't play, da 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 da. But I just love how he just gets that energy going, how he gets them riled up, because it's like, you know what I'm saying? I love sometimes feeling like the bad guy, especially when we play away. I love playing away because it's just like, you're the villain and you're here trying to just, you're just trying to mess everything up. You're trying to just rain on the whole parade. And Justin really helps with that by talking as much crap as he possibly can. And it's like, I'm gonna be right there to back him up with all the crap talking he talks, because it's like, all right, you're gonna come after him because he don't play. Now come after me because I actually do play. So now who you really gonna get mad at this point? So now he's my bench trash talk partner in crime. I ain't gonna lie.
Yeah, Justin said he was the best trash talker on the team and we had him on.
Yeah, he's definitely up there. I mean, the man has perfected this type of stuff that he comes up with. I just be like, dog, like, you're a genius at this. To the point where I remember we played like Pitt, and Pitt had a whole they had a trash talk sheet, and he was like one whole page of the trash talk sheet. And I said, dog, for you to be one whole page of the trash talk sheet and not play, you're doing something right, dog. Like, you are great at your job. You are great at it.
Speaking of the atmosphere in the arena, there's no place like the Tuck for that. And this upcoming season, we got another big season. The boys are looking good. What kind of stuff in terms of like themes or like a color out would you like to see at the Tuck this year? Maybe a white out, a black out, maybe a blue out for the N7, just whatever you can think of.
Oh man, definitely want to see a blue out when we have the N7, but the blackouts are tough. I'm trying to think when we played Louisville at home. I'm trying to think. I think it might have been a blackout, but I mean, I love when we wear our black jerseys, especially our blue jerseys, but the black jerseys was always just a staple of, you know what I'm saying? I felt like it just gave us a different mindset. And I felt like with the fans, what we call the six man, like them just participating in the color jerseys that we have, it just feels like, you know what I'm saying, the whole Tuck is united, you know? It's not just like, you know what I'm saying, we wearing black and then everybody wearing garnet, where it's like, all right, you know what I'm saying, school spirit. It's like, nah, like, we wearing black and y'all wearing black. It's like, it's almost like we dressed up like a funeral type thing. It's like, it's straight business. And like I said, 2 years ago, when we won the regular ACC championship, majority of the games we played were in the black jerseys. And once we put on the black jerseys, we already knew what time it was. It just seemed like it was a different focus. It was a different energy. You know what I'm saying? It was just a completely different mindset. So I definitely want to see a lot of blackouts. Hopefully we wear a lot of black jerseys this year, but now the blue outs as well. I would love to see those. The blue outs would be tough. I feel like just us all being united is just intimidating in itself, because I know the fans going to bring that energy. And us as players, I can speak for me specifically, is that like I feed off of that. I feed off when the fans are in there talking their mess and we over there talking our mess. You know what I'm saying? I just want to feel like the other team is just cornered and we just got them in the corner and just bullying them. That's what I love the most.
Yeah, if you didn't know, Jay and I are actually like on like the Null Zone, like student section executive boards. Like, we're one of like the student section leaders. So we're going to be like right in the front row behind the other team's bench. So like, you know, Jay and I are just going to be, especially Jay, because like that man is super creative.
Yeah, he told me y'all boys got to come with it this year, man.
Oh, yeah.
We had a Tuck pack last year. We going to have it this year. it's got to be a different feel this year. I know. I mean, especially for my, I want it to be just, I want it to be almost like how it was that Louisville game, every game where everybody's just roaring, where it's like, I'm next to my, like, I could be sitting next to Justin or somebody, and I can't even hear myself talking because it's just so explosive like that. I mean, that right there just gives it a whole different feel, creates a whole different atmosphere. And not only is it intimidating, but it just gives us all the energy we need to persevere through whatever situation we're in.
Yeah,
it's like,
so
it's a positive feedback cycle too. I mean, you guys feed off the energy we give you. You guys make some big plays. We keep getting more hyped up, and it just keeps going back and forth. I love it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so going off that, for the COVID year before COVID struck, 2019-2020, that was when I personally thought was our best chance to win that natty. We finished in the AP poll at number 4. Justin Lindley came on and reiterated the same statement, saying, man, that was the year when we were so deep, head to toe. It looked like we finished the year off strong. We got the ACC championship, and then we had to get that terrible news. So how do you think about, what's your take on that year? How do you think we would have fared in that March Madness season?
Man, I mean, I'm with everybody. I felt like, it almost felt like the whole country knew what was up with us. Like, you know what I'm saying? And it was so funny because we came into that year where people, like, they had us, like, finishing, like, close to the bottom of the ACC, or, like in the mid of the ACC, like, bottom to mid of ACC, because we lost Terrence, we lost Phil, we lost Fiondu, you know what I'm saying? We lost PJ, David, you know what I'm saying? All these vets, all these people who've been here and established themselves, we lost them. And they thought, man, Florida State's got to rebuild. And we just had a young, energetic, athletic, intelligent team, still with key leaders on the team, like Trent Forrest. Like, I mean, once we started playing, I swear I've never played on a team like that ever in my life. Like, I went into every game thinking, like, ain't no way we're losing. Like, even when we would be down in games, I felt so confident in our team and our skill set and in our defensive abilities and our athleticism. I was like, man, we're going to come back. We're going to find a way. And it's almost like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to do it. And we just ended up doing it again and again and again. And we kept getting better every game. It was like, I felt like that was so unique. Whereas, like, I felt like teams could start off hot and then dwindle down. I felt like we started off in a medium spot, and then we just kept getting hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter. And everybody was starting to figure it out. The younger guys were starting to figure it out. Everybody was starting to buy into their roles, to the point where it was like, I literally felt like teams were scared to play us. Like, I felt like once we got to the ACC tournament, and, you know what I'm saying, COVID started to happen, like, I felt like teams like Duke, Louisville, Notre Dame, I felt like they were scared to play us. And it felt good to be, like, that top dog, but I've never felt that feeling with the team before. And you know what I'm saying, Dick Vitale even wrote a book saying that we were going to be the national champions. I mean, we all felt it in our hearts that we were going to be the national champions after we won the regular season championship. And the ACC was pretty solid that year when we won the ACC regular championship. I felt like after we did that, I felt like that was a staple. Like, hey, like, we are that team. And, you know what I'm saying, we got ranked 4th in the country. We felt like the number one team in the country. We just felt like we need the post-tournament to prove it. And unfortunately, we didn't get that chance. But, man, I mean, even to this day, all we do is talk about, man, if COVID didn't hit, how different it would be. How, you know what I'm saying, how far we would have went. How tough, like, it's crazy because that was my first year playing basketball at Florida State. Like, I had my sit-out year, and so that was my first actual year playing. And, you know what I'm saying, of course I loved it, but then at the same time, dang, bro, my first year playing was the biggest what-if in Florida State basketball history. And it's like, of course we're going to go down the history books about it, but it's like, man, I hate that it had to be a what-if because, like, I at least want a certain result. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, even if we didn't come up with being national champions, I just want to see how far we would go. But in my heart of hearts, I felt like we would have been national champions that year.
With all the time that you've spent at FSU, you've obviously had a lot of great teammates. So include yourself in this starting five and build your all-time starting five and tell me how far that team goes in March Madness.
You're talking about the starting five
of your teammates that you've had while you're at Florida State. Anybody you want.
Oh, man. And you said including myself?
I mean, I feel like you'd want to put yourself in there.
Of course I want to put myself in there for sure. Oh, point guard, I need Trent. I need, got to have Dev, me. put Fee and give me. It's hard. Because I feel like right now it's in between like Pat and T-Man. Like,
that's tough. So, no, that's tough.
That's so tough. That is so tough because, like, Pat is a freak. He's a freak athlete, though. Like, he brings a lot to the table. I mean, as you can see how he's doing on the Bulls, but T-Man is just a – he's a Swiss Army knife. That man gives you whatever you need.
Not a lot of 19-year-old rookies can go back-to-back nights, though, guarding LeBron and Kawhi, so –
I know.
But then he got T-Man going crazy in game 6 against Utah, so it's tough.
I got to say, for the sake of what I've seen, you got to give me T-Man. Give me T-Man. I'm going to put T-Man right there. But that roster right there, Trent, Dev, T-Man, me, Fee, that's tough. That's a tough lineup right there. Very tough.
How far does that go in March Madness? All the way?
Oh, we're going all the way, for sure. There's too much heart on that team. Way too much heart on that team. Too much competitive spirit, too much talent, too much skill. That team is going all the way.
I know we already talked about the Bulls a little bit, but obviously it was great to see them last night in that preseason game. Caruso, LaVine, Lonzo, and DeRozan all looks like they've been playing together for a long time, and they don't even have Pat Will back, who's still – he's nursing that ankle injury. Do you keep up with the NBA at all, or how far are the Bulls going to go, and – who's your early pick to win it all this year?
My early pick to win it all. I mean, as a Chicago guy, I feel like it's only right to say Chicago, but I'm very interested to see how this team moves on going forward. You know what I'm saying? Right now, it's starting to seem like everybody's kind of buying into their roles early. You know, and it's crazy because we have so much superstar talent on that team. And it's like, you know what I'm saying? You've seen teams like the Lakers and the Clippers, who is like, they have unbelievable talent, even the Nets, unbelievable talent on the team, but sometimes it's like they just don't mesh as well to become that national championship team or that, you know what I'm saying, that the finals team. But I feel like, I don't know, I feel like the Bulls might have it. I think the Bulls might be cooking with something here. So I'm going to say the Bulls. I'm going to say the Bulls because we're looking really good.
You're not going to get really an argument good. From me. That's for sure.
And I'm saying, like, once we get to the playoffs is really about just, like, you know what I'm saying, scouting report and you know what I'm saying, really the amount of vets you have on your team. And the Bulls have a great amount of experience and vets on their team, as along with talent and athleticism. I mean, you got the blend of older talent with Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan.
And Vooch, bro. Don't forget about Vooch.
Yeah, I mean, and then you got the young talent as well, like, with Pat and them, and it's like I feel like that's a perfect team. It almost reminds me kind of our team a couple years ago, where we had a definite mix of old talent and young talent, and it just meshed well, where it's like the young guys are willing to learn and they're willing to bind to the roles because, you know, they respect the older guys, and the older guys are there to listen and, I mean, or there to instruct and pretty much lead and show the new guys the way. And just now, you know what I'm saying? Nobody's stepping on each other's toes. It looks like they're just out there having fun. So it's like, I feel like this Bulls team could be something really special, something Chicago hasn't had in a very, very long time.
Yeah, so staying on the NBA a little bit, we saw that you kind of like watching some of those Rico Hines runs, you know, like the pickup runs at Rico Hines. You have NBA players going there. And I've heard that it's kind of harder or more intense at those runs because it's every man for themselves. Sometimes there's no help defense. So if you can't play defense, you're going to be picked on the entire time. You feel me? So how is it in the FSU scrimmages with everyone just fighting for their life, going 100%? Because they know if I slack off, someone's going to show me up.
So I would say it's the same thing. The same mentality and everything is like, you know what I'm saying? We're going to force you to play defense for sure. As we should, because that's our staple. That is what makes Florida State Florida State, is that the fact that we have so many guys who could switch 1 through 5 and they defend. And so if we see a weak link, of course we're going to go at it. Now, of course, you know, we're going to have our help defense because that's just what we were taught. We were taught to be there for your brother if something breaks down. So, you know what I'm saying? I would say there's a lot more help defense than usual at the Florida State runs than a lot of other runs. But when it's all said and done and the games get intense and people get to talking, yeah, you get on that island now and you got to hold your own on that island. If you can't hold your own on that island, you're going to be on that island for a very long time. And once you're on that island for a very long time, people stop picking you up. And that's not a great feeling either. So it's like we almost force you to want to play defense. We force you to defend, because if you don't, well, then you're just not going to see the court. And that's that simple. And that's what's going to happen throughout the year. I mean, in the regular season, if you don't play no defense, you're not going to see the court. So we might as well get you ready for it early.
Speaking of that, so in Scotty Barnes' first preseason game, we saw him go for 13-9-6 while also contributing on the defensive end with 3 steals and 2 blocks. How big of an impact do you think Scotty will have this year with the Raptors? And what kind of player did Toronto get when they selected Scotty Barnes in that fourth pick?
Oh, man. I mean, Scotty in himself, I mean, he's going to be an important factor for the Toronto Raptors. I feel like the man is just like, he's a Mr. Do-It-All. I mean, the type of player Scotty is, he's very unique. I mean, not just off of his physique and, you know what I'm saying, his physical attributes, but just like his mentality and, you know what I'm saying, his competitive spirit. Like, the man is a competitor. I mean, when he first kind of stepped foot on campus and was playing with us in open gyms, I mean, I saw his just pretty much his heart. Like, you know what I'm saying? If he made a mistake, he was going to do everything in his power to get it back, you know? And then, even then, we saw him picking up our guards full court and getting steals in the back court. And, you know what I'm saying, ducking on the other end and just screaming. I'm like, wow, this dude is different. Like I said, like, I've seen a lot of players, but this dude is like, he accepts all challenges. I've seen the man go 1-on-5 and still dunk.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we will have our annual or every time lightning round. Don't go anywhere.
We're recording this on a Wednesday. So that means the Lightning lost last night. Sadly, we lost the Florida Panthers. I'm sure Chad's happy about that, but not a great day for the Bulls. But we're going to go to the lightning round anyways, because Malik's here whenever we get time. So, Cam, take it away.
All right, Malik, who wins a 1v1, Jalen Worley or Matthew Cleveland?
Ah, oh, Jesus Christ, this is tough. It's tough.
And why?
That's tough. Both of those boys are very talented, too. I would say right now, I would say Matthew Cleveland. I would say that because he's very physical and he has a very long wingspan, so he's very good at recovering his misses. But and he's also a really good defender. I would say he's a really great defender. Not saying that Jalen's not. Jalen has great hands. He's very quick, able to poke the ball loose. But you know, Matt has had longer arms, where he's able to challenge at the rim, make it very tough to make shots, layups. While also being able to poke at the ball and, you know, has a pretty good physicality to him where he's able to get to the rim and make you think twice before he pulls up for a mid-range pull-up. So, you know, he has that. But, I mean, shoot, sometimes I feel like it can go either way because both of those boys are talent. Jalen has a great layup package as well, as well as a great physicality as well. So it can go both ways, but right now I'm going to say Matt.
All right. So which game on the schedule this season do you got circled?
Oh, UCF. They beat
Why?
Us at home.
Oh,
they beat
yeah.
us at home last year. So, I mean, you know what I'm saying? When you come into the Tuck and you beat us at the Tuck and we get a chance to see you again, it's on site. Like, it's on site. Now, I'm not saying every other game, any game is less important. Like, all these games are going to be important. We have a very tough non-conference schedule. And, of course, the ACC is always going to be tough in itself. But, like, I mean, when it comes to, like, a payback game, I mean, that's the only team that has beat us really on the schedule this year from the previous year since I've been here. So, got to go for UCF.
We just had the UCF small forward. Me and Aaron played against him in high school. Dre Fuller, Jr. I don't know if you know
him. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, Aaron,
he used to drop like 40 on me and Aaron in high school basketball. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, nah, he's a good player. You know, he's a good player. But yeah, I mean, they're a great team. But you know what I'm saying?
Oh no, it's on site. Yeah,
it's on site. They beat us once. Now we gotta get our lick back. We gotta get our lick back.
Gotcha. So in the NBA, which LA team ends with a better record this season? The Lakers or the Clippers?
Lakers.
Okay. And then you played against players like Ja Morant, Zion, Cole Anthony, Cam Reddish. Who was the toughest player you've had to guard? Maybe they went to FSU. Justin Linder said it was Trent Forrest because he was so shifty. Who was the toughest player that you've ever had to guard?
The toughest player I ever had to guard. I would say it has to be Devin Vassell. I mean, shoot, when he first came on campus, I kind of knew he was gonna be a problem. Because I'm a pretty good defender myself, but the man has a high release on his jump shot, has handles, has really long arms, so it made it very hard to score on him. And the man just played with a tremendous amount of confidence. He works hard. I work out with him pretty often, and you know what I'm saying? He's always looking for the next workout. So I would say the hardest person I have to guard had to be Dev. I felt like he was almost unguardable because he could shoot the three, he can get to the basket with his long arms, but he also had a really good mid-range pull-up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to put us in contact with Dev. Tell him this was a great interview because that will be the end of it for today. Thank you guys so much for coming on. Let's start these sign-offs. Cam, thank you for coming on again, man. How are you?
Great interview. Great to hear another Chicago fan, and I hope you see a great season from the Bulls this year.
Yeah, absolutely, Malik. That was the funniest story for you giving us the play-by-play of Hunter Tyson and JJ. Those were hilarious. People hearing this are going to just be laughing their ass off when they listen to this podcast.
For
Aaron,
sure.
how are you doing? Aaron, how are you doing?
Guys, thank you so much for all the love on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. Keep following us on there. Keep interacting with our posts. We'll probably have some clips up of this interview before you even hear it. So if you're listening to this, they're already posted. Go check them out at underscore lock it or leave it underscore on TikTok and at lock it or leave on Instagram and Twitter. Go follow us, help us out. Really appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate Malik for coming on today. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And then lastly, go and follow No Zone FSU on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, kind of interact with them. We'll be working the student section, bringing that energy that Malik was talking about. Him calling us a six man just makes me even more hype now that I know that what I'm doing is really making an impact in the game. But Malik, thank you again for coming on. It was a great interview. Thank you so much.
No, thank you guys, man. It was a great interview. Made me very comfortable. I loved the questions, everything y'all talking about, for sure.
Appreciate that. And we will get to them about the blue and the blackout since you guys like that. We will definitely get that in the works. All
Yes,
right, so
sir. Love
until
it.
then, NBA preseason games are going again. Suns Lakers tonight. I'm not putting any money down for the preseason, but we will probably be betting a lot for the regular season. But until then, we'll be going over some stuff. Can't wait for FSU basketball to be back. Thank you again, Malik, and Ryan Fitzgerald, the kicker who won the game for us against Syracuse, will be coming on next. I'm telling you, what we're doing here at Lock It or Leave It, you gotta hop on. Thank you guys for coming again. Peace.